Good afternoon, everyone. Spectacular day today, heralding a very spectacular feast that I'm sure you're all going to enjoy. I know everyone's excited. Everyone's a little concerned about the things that perhaps are left undone they still need to do. I think that's kind of typical of this time of year, but it always seems to work out. Little Mary was riding home with her mother after Sabbath services, and her mother asked her, "Oh, Mary, what'd you learn in class today?" She said, "Well, Mother, we learned that Solomon was the wisest man in the whole wide world." "Yes, anything else?" "And also that he loved women and animals." And her mother looked at her and mouth dropped open, and, "What did you say? What did you mean by that? What did the teacher tell you?" She said, "Well, Mother," she said, "that Solomon was the wisest man in the whole wide world, and he had 700 wives and 300 porcupines." Now, that isn't exactly what the teacher told her, but let's turn over to 1 Kings 11 and see exactly what Mary heard. 1 Kings 11, beginning in verse 1, which said, "Solomon loved many strange women." And in verse 3, it said he had 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines, which is the correct answer to what Mary heard. I'd like to ask, and it's not a rhetorical question, I like to ask the married men and those who are dating a question about something, because I want to find out your approach to this. Do you ever find that it's difficult sometimes or a challenge to understand what your wife is thinking? Raise your hand. Okay, I'm glad that I'm not the only one. So if that is the case, how in the world did Solomon think he could do it with 999 others? There's just no way. And of course, in spite of the fact he was very wise, the reality was, if you look in verse 4, that he got older in his latter years, that they turned his walk away from God after other gods. And of course, he'd been warned about this because, you know, God had told him, don't mix with the surrounding countries. You know, stay pure, stay clean, stay to yourself. But nonetheless, Solomon was the wisest man in the world. And of course, God gave him that wisdom. Traditionally, during the Feast of Tabernacles, you read from the book of Ecclesiastes. So let's turn to Ecclesiastes 3. Turn to Ecclesiastes 3 and look about, and let's look at some several principles that can be utilized during the feast and that talk to this time of year. Ecclesiastes 2, or in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 2, this is the time to chapter. And it says there's a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. And in a sense, at the end of each feast every year, you begin the same process. You set aside out of your paycheck your second tithe, and that gradually builds. So by the time the new feast rolls around, you have a reserve, a nice reserve to pay for your lodging, your food, your travel, and some extras as well. And that's well designed by God for that to happen. I remember my first feast, I got baptized in June, and that was about the time I found out about Second Tithe and the Feast of Tabernacles. So consequently, by the time it rolled around, I didn't have a whole lot. But there were generous people around that enabled me to go. The next year, we'd saved our second tithe for a year, and we're able to rent a small cottage on Donner Lake near Truckee in the Squaw Valley area, which is where the feast was held. And many feasts have come and gone since then, but you know the thing I remember most about that feast? Being a poor, struggling college student at that time, the thing that I remember the very most is that we were able to afford butter to put on our baked potatoes. Now that might seem very inconsequential and very insignificant, but to me, and at that time, it was just, you know, there couldn't have been anything more delicious than a baked potato with butter. That was the highlight of that feast. And we've traveled all around the world since then. As my salary increased and we had more second tithe, we went to Thailand and Jordan, India, Africa, just to name a few. As a matter of fact, when we went to Kenya, Veronica liked that feast so well, she wanted to stay. She liked the African people. And of course, she was a little bit of a rarity because a lot of them had never seen someone who was blonde and had very fair skin. And the little children would come up after services or when we were visiting and they'd touch her. They'd touch her arm. I mean, that was, you know, very unusual. And there was one small baby who was held by his mother when she would come up to visit us. He'd always lean out away from his mother and lick her arm. I don't know if it was the perspiration on her arm from the salt, because Africa, of course, is very hot, or what, or if he thought she was something strange, he wanted to make sure she was real. But anyway, they were very warm. And the interesting thing about our feast there was that a number of the Kenyan brethren in the northern part of the country actually brought their second tithe to the feast. And what I mean by that is we had this row of cottages where we all stayed, and we went to Naramuro Lodge for the services. And every day as we'd walk past these cottages, there was one where we noticed at the beginning of the feast there were about a dozen chickens tied with a string around one leg tied to a post on the porch. And each day there would be one less chicken, one less chicken. We finally had to ask someone, what, you know, what's the deal with the chickens? Well, we found out that was the second tithe. And they would kill and butcher one each day, and that was what they ate. Three single women invited us to lunch one day, and they only had a small piece of chicken, but they divided it in two, and they gave it to Veronica and me. And we said, no, no, you don't have to do that. We can, you know, divide it up, because obviously they didn't have it that often. They said, oh, no, no, it's the custom that the guests are given the best. And of course, that made us very humble to realize, you know, you can go here and go to any corner practically, and there's a Kentucky fried chicken somewhere, or you can go into your grocery store and chicken is very plentiful. But to them, it was a real treat. Anyway, going down to verse 4, it's a time to laugh. It's a time to dance. The feast is a time to have a good time, to reunite with people that maybe you haven't seen for a year, or to meet new people, to get acquainted with people who are maybe attending the feast for the first time. Verse 6 says it's a time to get. And in the right way, it is a time to maybe get things that you're not able to afford during the rest of the year, to eat out in restaurants that you perhaps don't have the opportunity to go to during the rest of the year, to do things like that, to do things special for your family. There's another part of the getting, though, that I think was aptly described by someone who I heard once that talked about your money in general. And he said, and I thought he had a very good philosophy about that. He said, money is to be used for three things: for spending, for saving, and for giving. And many people don't think too much about the giving, but I think it's incumbent upon us as church members and as trying to adhere to God's laws that we don't forget the giving part of it. The getting is fine, but remember when you're getting that a part of that should be allocated to helping those that are less blessed than you are. And you'll see them every year at the feast. You'll see people walking by themselves to services. You'll see them standing on the fringes on the outside side, maybe there for the first time, maybe not knowing anyone, and people from your own congregation that perhaps don't have as much. I think the essence of the feast is being able to help people that fall in that category. It is a blessing. You'll go away from the feast and that type of thing, being able to help someone else, really is a blessing from God. You can feel it. It's just something you can't maybe verbalize, but it's there. And verse 8 says that this is a time of peace, this time of year. It pictures the millennium when the world will be at peace. So, given that, I hope you all have a wonderful feast. Remember to enjoy it. Remember these concepts and these principles. But also remember, help make someone happy, like the song goes, the lyrics, make someone happy, and you'll be happy too. And if you do that, I'll guarantee you'll come back and you'll be able to say once again that the Feast of Tabernacles 2008 was the very best feast ever.